Thank you for making Atomic Moms in the top 5 of Kids and Family on iTunes last week. Please rate us and share on Twitter, FB, Instagram. We're at Atomic Moms.
You may not have heard of today's guests, Dr. Drew and Michael Catherwood from Loveline, but we think they have a real future in radio and podcasting. They've invited us to co-podcast with them today. So be advised, this is an after-hours episode, and it's a little NC-17. Enjoy.
Yeah, greatest podcast in the world. Greatest fucking podcast ever. Mike and Drew Show. Very happy to be splitting the duties of podcasting with two excellent podcasters in their own right.
You said splitting.
Drew.
Thank you.
I can always count on you.
Well, mind you, what did I say I was doing?
You were
going
shitting.
To the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what'd you ask?
I asked if you were beating off.
Okay.
Right. It's a
Introduce our guest.
Well, I was trying to until some
I just
little boy sat down and got all.
Got all
God almighty, you and your Tourette's.
It's warm in here.
Ellie Noss and the beautiful Bianca Kylik, also known as my wife. They join us this evening. Also known as the two ladies behind the new and exciting top 5 new and exciting podcasts on all of iTunes.
Not all of iTunes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it is, isn't it?
No, Kids and Family.
Yeah, it's all of iTunes.
Don't sell yourself short.
Yeah, it's a big category.
It's all of the world. They are the Atomic Moms, the Atomic Mom Podcast, at Atomic Moms on Twitter and Instagram. Welcome, ladies.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So this all kind of came about as happenstance. You know, Drew and I do this here podcast. Look, I don't like to say it. It's just fucking science. It's the greatest podcast in the world.
Yeah, of course.
And so
challenged now.
Yeah, we have
by
to
by this
do
one.
It.
Yeah.
But you guys do a great podcast about women and
no.
The whole Jesus Christ. We're not at our house. You can't interrupt me.
I dig it. This is the best.
About women and the process of giving birth and then being a mother.
No, it's about parenting overall. Like, it's not
it's
just
mostly about women parenting.
Do you have guests?
Yes.
You have experts, yeah.
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 Good times.
I think, and it's just, you know, how did we say it earlier? It was the diversity of modern parenting, and it applies to both men and women. And
I think I certainly have listened to all your podcasts, and I was a guest on one of your podcasts, but it is through the experience of parenting through the prism, through the eyes of a woman. I mean, let's not.
Yes, I have woman eyes.
Yeah. I mean, you definitely talk about husbands. You definitely talk about male figures, but it's all how it relates
and we have
to
male,
mothers.
And we have male guests on.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
But yes.
All right,
fine.
Yeah.
Yes, and. We have experts and friends and super awesome people drop by.
Not only that, but, right?
Yeah.
Are we doing improv here, everybody?
No, we don't say but in improv, right? Isn't that the rule?
Not only that.
Yes, and.
Don't let
okay,
anybody.
Okay, I just have to say. I'm kind of fanboying out really fast. Okay, can we just take a moment?
Sure.
Because I listened to you, Drew, on Marc Maron's podcast.
Oh yeah.
And I got the chills so many times.
Mm.
And
did you orgasm?
It was so empowering. Later, but okay. Not because of the podcast.
Yeah, right.
And I wanted to ask you about.
He's a great guy. Great interviewer. Yeah. Everything good. Oh. I have nothing bad to say.
Okay, good.
Highly doubt that's what she was going to ask you about.
No, but I could tell she was wondering about those
I
kinds
was,
of things.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. No. Pressure. You talked about parental pressure and that you try not to put pressure on your kids.
Yes. And how you're in such a zone with Mark. You just give over to it. So I cannot remember half of what I talked about.
It's so fascinating. Everyone needs to listen to it. You're incredible in it.
Thank you. It's very good. But I wonder if I talked about how difficult I'm finding this period of parenting to be.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. So I am finding it to be the hardest. Well, amongst the hardest.
Slow down here because for the vast majority of the Atomic Moms listeners, they're not familiar with not only Mike and Drew podcast, but you as a person.
Right.
And Drew is the parent of three amazing kids, but they're triplets.
Yeah, triplets. Two boys and a girl.
Which is special.
They're 22 now. We used to laugh at singlet moms. Singlets.
Hey, but all kidding aside, you know.
But believe me, trust me, it's plenty. It's unnatural what we did.
Yeah.
Go ahead, finish.
I was going to say, that being said, you used to laugh at single moms.
Parents of single kids. Yeah.
Everyone else in this room is the parent of just one single child.
I know.
Hold on. And you're right. I mean,
it's really hard.
Many times Bianca's been breastfeeding and we'll be sitting there talking. And I'm like, this sucks. You know, you have to wake up in the middle of the night and she's tethered to you and all that. Imagine if we had three.
Or
like,
just
imagine
even twins.
If we had
imagine
three.
Even twins. I can't. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. But when you don't know any difference, it's a little bit better. You know, because you just that's just your parenting experience. It's yeah. just you know, this incredible.
If you didn't
thing.
Have triplets, would you have had
you
more
can't
children?
Even hold them oh, all sure. at once.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I know. Well, you're outgunned all the time. You know, you're never 3-on-3. At best, you're 2-on-3, right?
Yeah.
And you know, for a singlet, you're usually 2-on-1-on-2 or 2-on-1.
Right.
This is 3-on-2.
Yeah, but you could fuck up your kids. You can still beat the shit out of them.
You know,
and Susan could totally serve your daughter.
Yeah, but I'm really interested to hear why this is the most difficult.
So that was all very, very difficult. I mean, and we wished we'd written it all down or done it. It was the technology wasn't quite as easy then. They're 22 now.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even think about that.
Yeah, well, but I mean, for in terms of recording the experience, we really wished we could have.
Cause, right.
Because we went through it intensively, and we wish we should have recorded something. And now it's all
but
gone.
Were but, you also you weren't personally at a place where you probably would have the time to record
yeah it. And I was practicing medicine full time, and it was out of it's insanity. It was my hair turned gray like very fast during that couple of years. And but what I'm finding difficult is so now they're graduating college and they're all over the country doing stuff, and I don't know whether to push them out hard or to pull them in firmly or to kind of push and pull a little bit and sort of see what each one needs. And by the way, I'm trying to navigate for three of them. It's a challenging time. We just sell our house, and so they don't have any place to come back to? Or is it important that we keep it so they have a home base to operate from? Biggest thing for me is that by the time I graduated college, I was tracked in. I knew what I was doing, and the road ahead was clear. My kids are trying to figure that out, and they're trying to figure out in a world where the ground is changing under them all the time. And I find that very, very challenging.
Do you
very
think?
Difficult.
Do you think that it's pretty normal? Because I know in my family, you know, it was the ebb and flow. Like there was always one kid in the house that would come in.
We'll
for
see.
A little bit.
Yeah,
then,
we'll
yeah.
see. And we want them to have a home base. We want them to feel like they got it. That's why we kept our house. It's just so they have that place. That's been we made that decision consciously. I don't know if it's the right one or not. I mean, maybe it's better.
But none of them are like bums that are
no.
sitting
oh,
at
no.
home.
No, not
like,
at all. But they could maybe they'll be. I don't
but
know.
In a weird way, that might make it harder.
If they
because
what?
Like for my parents, decisions were easy because they were honest. And I'm not trying to just for the sake of like, you know, making jokes. Like I had nothing going on when I moved out of the house. They were so happy to rid me of the house and me of them at the time. If they wanted to sell the house and retire somewhere else, so be it. Like sentimentality was divorced from us at that point.
You burned them out.
Right. Mm. And there was no kind of euphoric recall to where we grew up in that place on both sides.
Mm.
You know, so having three really smart, really successful, really ambitious children kind of motivates you to want to hold on to what got them there, maybe, in a way.
Yeah,
you know what
I'm
saying?
That's right. And so we're trying to navigate. It's all a navigation in parenting, right? Yeah. Everything, there's no, like, do it just that way. It's always just sort of you're navigating through and trying to get the balance right always. And
do you have different tactics for each child?
A little bit, yeah. We try to anyway. And it depends on the thing.
I feel like I had a lot of pressure growing up from my parents. And so now I feel like I'm going to try to not.
Well, I think
daughter.
I had that too. And I'm worried that that's part of what's motivating me to back off a little bit and let them figure it out for themselves. And yet I know I pressure the hell out of my kids because they all went to, you know, sort of Ivy League type schools and stuff. And sometimes a little bit resentful.
But, you know, your sons, I don't have, like, ongoing conversation with your daughter, but your sons, they don't really bitch about it. And they open up about, like, pressures. And they've never kind of even once intimated that you or your Susan, like.
I'll send you in to drill a little harder now that they're home. We'll see what happens.
Right. The only thing I really drill them on is getting laid.
Yeah, I know.
And they just
and
don't
I'm
seem to.
For that.
Yeah, I try my best.
We saw Douglas Pinsky last night at Acoustic Christmas, and I really enjoyed my conversation.
Oh,
with
thank
him.
You for that. He was so grateful, by the way. Yes.
Oh, he's
the best.
He is. He's the best, and he's so just has such a positive outlook on everything, and he's just so he's matured so much.
Isn't that crazy?
In the last 2 years since
isn't that crazy? Yeah. And that's not all just getting older. That's education.
Yeah,
you know. And I tell all three of them, I go, look at yourselves now. And how about 2 years ago?
Yeah.
You're now, I hire you. I don't hire that guy that was hanging around 2 years ago.
Right.
You are a different, and they're very aware of it. They're very aware that they see the world differently. They think differently. They write differently. They express themselves differently.
But he's a lovely human being. Well, thanks. I enjoyed so much talking to him, and I felt like I had to do double duty of having a nice conversation with him because my husband spoke to him so horribly and said such horrible things.
Come on.
You're so crass.
Wait, you got to understand something. This is the Mike and Drew podcast, and our listeners expect that. They're going to be very disappointed that you put a bridle on him here tonight.
Well,
they're going to be really unhappy.
I'm not putting a bridle on him tonight.
Normally, what they like is him making me as uncomfortable as possible. That's what our listeners, our podcast like.
And I'm cognizant of the fact that we're sharing this podcast with the lovely ladies of the Atomic Moms, but what I was going to say is, in my defense, not only of what our listeners...
Or is this going to go up as an Atomic Mom one, or ours, or
both?
Both. Yeah. So
it's
I figured
one of those NBC sitcom crossovers.
Right.
So I figured our listeners would get this and go, Mike, what the hell is the matter with you?
My wife, for those of you who are still kind of confused, one of the Atomic Moms is my wife, Bianca. And I agree that I was saying a lot of horrible, crass things to Douglas Pinsky last night.
He's not heard before from Mike.
Right.
Pretty much every time they interact.
I'm a little offended in that you seem to just forego the fact that I've said a lot of really nice and encouraging stuff, too.
Of course. I was exaggerating and being dramatic.
Okay.
But I also was, you know, it's kind of a good topic, I think, to bring up here as we're all sitting here talking about being parents. Because we talked about it with somebody else last night. I can't remember. Oh, I was talking with Susan, your wife. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Mike, who I adore and love. But Mike has – I think Mike kind of has three sides to his personality. There's the like
– at least I'm three-dimensional.
Yes.
Right, nice.
The ridiculously crass, like insane –
jeez,
insane.
I've never seen that part. Are you kidding me? Wow.
Then there's like the middle of the
Mike
road where he like kind of goes, you know, a little bit on either side. And then there's like the Mike that I get at home who's pretty respectable. I hate to blow that cover
no,
for
sure.
you, but you know, every once in a while, uber crazy crass Mike does show up at the house, and I always wonder
he
like
he does that just so he can tell us about it later.
Probably
sometimes, sometimes it is a stunt. There's no doubt about it.
And Ellie's husband Adam is my boss. He is the creator of Undateable on NBC. March 17th,
coming back after The Voice.
Yes, and he's not as crass as Mike.
Oh my God, he's like. He's such a sweet Midwest boy. No way.
But,
he blushed right now across town, just knowing that we're talking about any of this.
But he does have his levels of being a guy.
He's a comedy writer, too.
Yeah, and he's a comedy writer. And so
he's a very masculine person. I feel like I should defend him.
Yes.
He has all of his moments are as a strong man.
But like, where is the line, like, in terms of when you have young children in the house, you know, and Mike has things on his phone that would be very inappropriate for our daughter to see.
How about the things he was teaching her to say last couple of days ago?
Yes. No, I know.
Should we, as Ellie looks at me, what? Maybe we should post that video on our Loveline show.
No,
and they,
no. Well, I'm afraid you'll get arrested.
But
I didn't.
Okay. I'm just afraid.
All right.
Do you want?
I don't think it's reportable, but it just scares me.
I like to send Drew a lot of pictures and let me clarify for Drew's sake. I send him these pictures because I know Drew hates it, and that's what I enjoy about it.
And he sends it to there's a group of us.
Yeah,
and it's actually your wife's fault. Do you know
that's
this?
True.
It's your fault.
Why?
Because you came on here one day.
Oh yeah.
And she came on here. We went, what is with the picture? And she goes, I just think it's his way of telling you that he's thinking about you. and to which my wife went, well, why doesn't he ever send me those pictures?
It's really Susan's fault.
It started a whole thing, and we are still living under that to this day. So,
And Drew, you didn't help yourself any because you said, man, it really is kind of funny. I'll be sitting on one side of my house, and all of a sudden I'll hear on the other side of my house, my wife screaming. I know that you've sent her something that she enjoys, and I just laugh my ass off. Okay, all right.
That's what really got going.
Okay, but
I send Drew these pictures of like women with prolapsed asshole or like gaping butt, like these like horrible
conversation for your audience.
These huge horrible like porn
top
like,
five family and kids.
I send him women who have through whatever abuse they've suffered, they think it's a good idea to turn their butthole inside out.
He just sends macabre and horrible images.
They're
That's
horrible.
Yeah.
But so my question for you, Drew, is like, what is the impact of even like at this age, let's say?
We don't know.
Right.
I warned him jokingly, but you're going to get it back soon fast. All of a sudden, those words that you're saying will come back to you because they are absorbing everything.
Right.
It may not traumatize them. It may not, you know, warp their perceptions. But they're picking everything
because
up.
Like
everything.
The good news is that
she's in an environment that's very, you know, really what they're picking up is the sort of the affective environment. You know, what it feels like and looks like, and you know how attached they are to mom, and how regulated you, how much you help them regulate their emotions, and the stuff he's doing is even in that regulatory context, which is kind of an interesting little thing.
Right.
But the words are just being kind of, they're going to get absorbed.
Right.
They're not being absorbed as something bad. They're just being absorbed in the process. And they're going to come back.
Because in the beginning, it's just the mimicry, right? It's just, she's just saying what he says or
what
I say.
It's that. So I think I talked about this a bit on the Marc Maron thing, that intersubjective space, that space of two humans sharing.
Yeah.
Yes. That's a huge area of study these days. And it's where all the magic happens, in my opinion. So it's the most important piece of the human experience. And it's been largely sort of marginalized.
And that's just being fully present with the other person.
Being present in being attuned with your whole body and with your, well, particularly we think it's the right brain that you're using.
I feel like we're doing it right now. We're having a moment.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm very attuned to you, Dr. Yeah,
that's good. I like that. Makes me feel good.
Well, speaking of that, if I can interrupt, was I right that Ellie is your Aryan dream?
Yes.
I was like, wait till you meet Ellie, because I know Dr. Drew's type. And I was like, oh, man, is Drew going to be just filling up his Levi's?
Oh, my goodness.
Going back to my husband really quickly, because you said filling up Levi's. My mother-in-law listens to you guys, this podcast, every night before she goes to bed.
The Loveline podcast.
No, this one.
She listens to the Mike and Drew podcast?
Yeah.
No way.
Yes, she does.
Probably shouldn't.
She does. What?
She probably shouldn't.
Only once
She's
a week.
Michigan. Oh, well, then once a week she listens to it. No, she does listen to this one.
Impossible.
No, I swear she does.
She would not allow you on the show.
No, because she asked me over the summer. We were at their little, like, great-grandparents' cottage. Yeah. And she goes, I never knew what squirting was.
Well, that could be the podcast.
I was going to say
that. Could be Loveline. That could be Loveline.
No, but she knows about this, too.
I hope she doesn't listen to this podcast because, let me give you a little taste of what we tend to cover. Last time we went through a bracket where we decided who had the
NCAA college
basketball bracket, where Drew and I decided with all the science we had available to us who had the biggest butthole in Hollywood.
I promise you, she listens.
And who do we say?
Yeah, Tom Cruise. It's your mom or your
my mother-in-law.
She's the coolest person. She is.
I believe Tom Cruise has the biggest butthole.
Wait, say that again because she'll make that her
voicemail.
What's her name? Lynn Stichiel.
Lynn Stichiel's the coolest person on earth. Clearly.
Pretty true.
Merry Christmas, Mom.
I have a question for Dr. Drew for the sake of the Atomic Moms here. We are happy to be joined by Ellie Noss and my beautiful wife, Bianca Kylik, who are the Atomic Moms, an excellent podcast about all the phases and all the different experiences that come along with being a mother. And, you know, a big part of the Atomic Moms is that there's no judgment there. There's so many kind of subgenres and factions within motherhood nowadays because we are lucky enough and also burdened to be in a place where there's so much information. So there's a lot of people who think it's mandatory that you breastfeed, mandatory that you eat a placenta and have your birth at home. And then there's people who are just as strict and just as passionate to the contrary. Everybody has their own opinion, it seems. What do you, Dr. Drew, find to be the most disturbing kind of point that's being made for young mothers nowadays, like the big kind of trend that you as a doctor see as a problem? And then what do you think is being overlooked as a doctor in modern motherhood and giving birth and stuff like
well,
that?
Well, I've already mentioned the one thing, the importance of – I don't want to just throw it under the rubric of attachment because people have those conversations all the time. Attachment parenting is so important. But they really don't know what they're talking about 90% of the time.
Right.
And so – because very few people have actually had the experience of a secure attachment, a real secure attachment.
Right.
So they don't reproduce it well with their children.
That's a good point. And I certainly don't have any qualifications to say that. But I do, knowing with the calls we take nightly on Loveline, there's this whole lot of abuse in this country.
Yeah. Abandonment, neglect, shitty parenting, all this stuff.
There's a whole gradation of it.
Yeah.
I mean, even just what we would think is like a normal person
is
has
not
a hard
good.
Time.
That's
with
right.
It.
By the way,
there's
a great book called Real Love that talks about that and talks
by
about
Mary J. Blige, I believe.
Good one, babe.
Thanks, honey.
But talks about the cyclical nature of the lack of unconditional love, and that we don't even know what real love
cyclical
is.
Cyclical nature, meaning like in certain periods of history?
No, well, meaning that our parents didn't experience unconditional love.
So we did transgenerational stuff.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Very common. And you throw wars and translocation and immigration stuff into the mix, and now you've got it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where in certain populations, slavery or genocide. I mean, think of all the different things that have happened in the last 150 years. Just insane. And that is why we have so much narcissism, or so much in the sort of narcissistic category of personalities right now. And those are people that don't make great parents unless they really are carefully shown how to do this. It's really not something, you know, people say, go back to work. That's it. Well, you know, parenting, give me the recipe for parenting. I can't say how many times I go out lecture like, just give me last week we had a general in here teaching us how to make great leaders, so that he gave us the recipe for a great leader. Tell me the recipe for great kids, and right, you know, so we can just follow that recipe.
Right.
That is anathema to the way it's done. That's even that kind of language is wrong. Here's what you do. Sit there and see what occurs to you as you attune to your child's body. That's a language they don't understand.
You know what it reminds me of a little bit is diets. I feel like there are, you know, like South Beach diet or the protein one?
Or the blood type
ketogenic
diet.
Anything. But it's
macrobiotic,
like people are, instead of going out and just learning about nutrition and learning this is what makes you feel good.
But the problem is people, my kids just, my daughter the other day was saying to me, she was saying, I think the problem in this country is nobody really has a full education anymore. And now that they're sort of on the end tail end of that, I've always thought that no one's taught biology. So how the hell can you study nutrition if you've never studied biology?
Right.
You've never studied chemistry. How the hell is something as complex as nutrition if you don't understand basic chemistry or basic biochemistry? You mean basic biochemistry? No way. Nobody knows that.
And I think that, Drew, to transition into another topic that I comes up and is very important to a lot of young mothers.
Stop it. I'm going to finish that thought. But the same applies to psychology and interpersonal experiences. They don't have the basic building blocks of how we work as human beings.
We unfortunately have to take a quick break. But I want to ruminate on this for a second.
Yeah.
And it's that of vaccines.
Yeah.
And I don't have a dog in the fight. But I do find it find it odd that sometimes the most vocal voices in either camp are people who have no real understanding of how the human body works as a whole.
Yes, just please study. Yeah, study biology. So, that's all. Study biology, and it gets pretty obvious.
I am not just saying this because I'm clearly biased, because Ellie Noss, who is one of the one half of the Atomic Moms, is my wife's boss's wife. And also super hot.
But you'd have me anyway, right?
Yeah, I would. Definitely.
I'm curious more what you liked about the Marc Maron thing, too. Because again, it was such an alternative
Before we get there, let me remind everybody, the other half of the Atomic Moms is my wife, Bianca Kylik. And they make a great podcast. They're working on – they're only like, what, 5 episodes deep?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, you guys, you're both naturals, and I'm not just saying that. It's not an easy thing to do to talk. For the sake of not in conversation, to talk for entertainment, it's hard.
I just happen to think there's a great website called Kids in the House. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-mm.
And on there are little like 3-minute videos from great experts. If you want to get potential guests for your show, just scroll through those videos and topics and things. You'll find people to be great for your show.
Definitely.
They're very a lot of media worthy people know how to express themselves.
Awesome.
All right, so now we will get back to what Dr. Drew was talking about.
Marc Maron.
Dr. Drew was recently on Marc Maron's podcast, and it was. I tweeted about it, and essentially what I said was, as my wife and I listened to it together on a long car ride, you can't really pay enough money to get entertainment that high value. It was so dense. It was so deep. It was so entertaining.
Mark and I talking.
I know, but the type of guy Mark is, he's so smart, and he has that acerbic wit. He's so sharp. But he's also pretty fearless as far as opening up about his insecurities.
Mm.
And you there in a form that you're not usually there, you're not usually afforded. And that's where you can really speak your mind and talk about things that are important to you, not important to whatever producer is behind pulling strings.
I was surprised at how many similarities there are between you and Mike, because
no kidding.
I asked him on the drive. I was like, have you guys talked about this? And he's like, well, not really. It was like, we're just dudes.
We don't hang out and talk.
I know. But I was very surprised by that. I was so there were so many things that I looked at Mike and I was like, oh my God, they could be talking about you right now.
Except for the huge cock, Drew. They were big penis.
You're going to edit that out for your guys, for your family audience.
Well, what really struck me was that when you were talking about anxiety, because I've spent the past 7 years working on my anxiety, and I've actually been writing a book about it. But I was just blown away by how brave you were talking about it, about, you know, sitting across from a therapist and not feeling anything and the dissociation.
Oh, yeah, when I was in those dead spots.
Learn how to connect again.
Crazy.
And so.
But that was, but turned out to be for me, that was the critical thing. I mean, that was where my anxiety was coming from. Who knew it? You couldn't find that. It was just through years of deep work that, phew, there it was. And once I could tolerate the emptiness, and it was in emptiness is, again, another common thing when you've had narcissistic injuries. And when I could tolerate the emptiness, I could feel it. I could be in it. I could sit in it, and the anxiety tended to go away. And it also afforded me opportunity to regulate more fully in other ways.
Yeah, I've been noticing, like, even being here, just like the dysregulation of my system, and like, okay, I'm my sympathetic nervous system is spiking up, like I'm getting higher and higher. And
how do you think that affects your daughter?
I'm super in check with it with her, and I'm so glad that I've spent the past few years or many years doing different things to work on it, so that I was able to have the birth that I had and be the parent I am. And if I hadn't done that, I would be. You know, it would just, I don't want to say anything about, I'm going to get in trouble, but.
You'd spin.
Sorry?
You'd spin.
Yeah, I'd spin, and it would just be like it was for the past probably five generations in my family.
Right.
And I feel like I'm trying to
that. How has your daughter affected your anxiety, though? How, I mean, you're talking about how you it could potentially affect her. How has she maybe either exacerbated or lessened your anxiety?
Well, when she's crying, I can feel it. You know, like that, you know, or she's screaming in the back seat of the car, and I'm like, okay, don't get in a wreck. But normally, even just thinking about like holding her little feet, like it just grounds me. And I feel so much more relaxed. And our breath is in sync.
That's the attunement.
It's a very grounding experience having a child. You
yeah,
know?
It's interesting. I listened to Ellie say that. That's the same word that I've used lately when I'm talking to people about it. Is it centers you and it brings you, it connects you. You know, when we do the Dr. Pratt stuff, the Code to Joy, and there's one part of the exercise that's grounding, and you envision your core connected to the earth. And I feel like that's what Magnolia has done, is taken that imagery and made it very real and concrete for me.
I feel like I increase your anxiety more than our daughter does.
Increase?
Yeah.
No.
The only thing I ever really notice increasing Bianca's anxiety, I don't think she's embarrassed talking about the fact that she suffers from some anxiety problems every once in a while. A lot better in the last four or 5 years.
I had horrific anxiety from about 17 to – it started after a really bad experience with ecstasy, and that's a typical thing, right?
Can mess that up.
Yeah.
It can cause panic and things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's an age in which panic gets going, you know, but 18 to 22. That's when I started having panic attacks at 19.
Yeah.
They're horrible. And these drugs will bring all that out. They open that circuitry out. Pot can do it. Ecstasy can do it. Stimulants can do it.
Yeah. I think I was really lucky, actually, that I had such bad anxiety, because I think I would have been very open to try a lot of different things, and that really nipped it in the bud. Like, when I moved to L.A., I was done. I was not trying anything else. I wonder that, too, about, like, with our kids, you know, especially – now, because I feel like the social anxiety and because of social media and kind of that we're not, I don't know. I was talking to someone the other day. I don't know if it was you and I having this conversation, Ellie, or not, but about there isn't even any long-term effects shown yet of what social media.
Yeah, we have no idea.
Yeah.
We have no idea. I just, would we be surprised if you took a group of bonobo monkeys and sat them in front of a screen with all this kind of crazy stuff being pouring down on them, that it might affect their behavior?
Yeah.
Would that be shocking? You know, so we really don't know yet what the full impact is going to be. Plus, wait till you see how difficult it is to control what rains down on your kids.
Right. Well, that's
what
I was
about
to say.
We had all the nanny gear we could possibly get, and we watched like crazy, and I'm sure stuff still got through.
And I'm more concerned about, at least for society as a whole, is like how this next generation of children's growing up now, my child's generation, how like they're going to consume art and media, because you're not going to be able to have any weighted pauses in movies. You're not going to have any breaths to be taken in a stand-up everything's going to have to be like
maybe
condensed into 40 seconds.
Maybe there'll be some opportunity for stuff to swing back.
Maybe.
Within the hyperspeed stuff, yeah. There'll be some other stuff. It's hard to predict. That's what
it seems like that with podcasts, right? I mean, that's sort of like a long form.
Yeah, right. Thing. It's a slower, more mature conversation.
Well, it's funny to me that the entity that's most likely going to destroy talk radio is trying very hard to get back to the golden age of talk radio. You know, like
podcasts.
I said, the best podcasts are just really good talk radio shows from like the 70s, where. Excluding the fact that there's no FCC regulation. Mm-hmm. But, old-fashioned talk radio used to be guys having real conversations. Like, and that's – you don't get that very much anymore on regular radio anymore. Mm-hmm. There's still bastions of hope. But the great podcasts. And also, look, there would be flat-out no place on a terrestrial site, certainly. I don't know about on Sirius or whatnot. But there's no place for a mom show. And that's the beauty of a podcast. It's like, you guys want to talk about it? I'm sure there's plenty of people that are interested. Boom, done.
Well, we've said it ourselves. So anyone can do a podcast from your basement. I mean, there's no, I don't know.
Do you guys, because both of you have your own lives, professionally and personally, outside of doing this podcast, are you at all surprised to see how invested you guys are or how not invested you are? I mean, is it just like, hey, this is fun, but you're indifferent? Or has this become something much larger than you ever anticipated it would be? Kind of talking to being able to be a podcaster and talk about mom stuff.
Well, it feels crazy to have something that's within our control. I mean, because I think for both of us in the acting world, it's like you're so used to everything being so out of your control. Yeah. So to have something where we get to kind of call the shots and be our own bosses in a way has been awesome. And it gives you a focus, takes away from the, as an actor, you feel like everything's always about the next job and what next audition meeting, whatever. And I don't know about you, Ellie, but for me, it's like, okay, this is ours and we can do whatever we want with it, within reason.
And it's really fun.
Yeah, it's really
fun. It feels exciting.
Like, I bet you think about
energized.
It all week.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Like who can we talk to?
Yeah.
And what do we want to discuss? And it's never ending. And I have a quick question for you. Mm. Are we going to screw up our children because we have a podcast where we talk about them?
No. although I was worried that I worry about my kids a similar kind of way. Am I going to screw them up?
I mean, I'm already spiraling about my parents being like, we did not pressure you.
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, but Drew, you raised three really great kids doing Loveline all of their life.
Yeah.
And I think you towed the line perfectly in that you mentioned that you had them and you bring up certain maybe struggles of being a parent, but you didn't talk particularly about either of your your children.
And they
their
really,
business is their business.
They weren't really aware that I was doing it, really. And when they'd come and visit, we'd keep them in the other rooms and stuff. So
until recently, and I farted.
Until Mike showed up, and
just
then
wrecked your son.
Broke
with gas.
Down all those boundaries.
Yeah.
But Bianca's looking concerned, by the way. Really.
No, I was actually just thinking one step further to that question of like, what about people posting all these photos of their kids, and then you get into the whole celebrity thing, and like with people taking pictures, like. You know, what do celebrity kids think? The paparazzi is always there taking
That's
photos
insane.
Of them.
No, you're right. I mean, Suri Cruz must think that, like, every kid in the world has people constantly taking pictures of them. Like, she doesn't know anybody. It's not her fault. She's a little kid.
Right.
So she was raised in a world where every day of her life people are constantly taking pictures of her when she goes out. That's just normalized to her. I was thinking about that when I was looking at Jay-Z and Beyonce's Christmas pictures, and they have their beautiful little kid. And I'm like, that little girl, as young as she is, thinks – everyone in the world has a private jet and has a 35-foot Christmas tree.
Crazy.
You know what I'm saying? Like, she doesn't know any better. That's all she's been exposed to, you know? Just like I was shocked to find out, like, I always think about, like, how at what age I learned, like, not every dad carries a briefcase to work. You know, like, little things that you just – because that was normalized. That was my life. My dad carried a briefcase and put on a tie to go to work. Then I didn't know that there was like guys who could wear T-shirts to go to work. I didn't understand that. It didn't compute.
But what about – and this is an interesting question for you, Drew, because you've probably experienced this with your kids. Like nobody knew who my parents were.
Yeah.
You know? Like my mom was a nurse. My dad was a doctor. They had normal little lives. What is it – like I have friends that have celebrity parents and it's like they grew up thinking that everyone in the world cares about us and knows what we're doing.
Yeah. Be just normal parents. Yeah. Don't let just make sure they understand it's just part of your job.
Yeah.
Just your job. And yeah. That doesn't affect your family life. Doesn't affect how you go through life. Doesn't mean anything. It's just the job. And although I just had an interesting experience with my daughter last week where it took on a different new dimension where normally I just like – I completely very dismissive of everything. Just like, eh, whatever. And they have a little weird stuff in college, you know, they get very upset about that. Like people want to know me because of you. You know, they managed to navigate through that where it's not been much of an issue.
Yeah, your sons don't use it to their advantage.
Right.
Much against my advice.
Mike's been trying to get them to use it. Now that they've shaken free of it, he's trying to get them to use it properly. But he'll get to them. But I was in New York last week and all the demonstrations were happening. And some of them happened right in front of our apartment. And I was taking pictures, and my daughter started texting me. She's like, "You have to go out there." And I go, "Yeah, I'm feeling sympathetic. I feel like I should." And I'm thinking, "Oh yeah, CNN's going to love this. It's just impossible." And she goes, "You have to. You're a public figure. Do you understand the statement that will make?
Wow.
You are going." And I was like, "Whoa, honey, hang on. Whoa, I want to go. I've got this organization I've got to check with." And they were like, "No, you're not going out there." And she could not understand that.
Yeah.
That to her was sort of like she was crestfallen. She was pissed. Yeah. Like pussy. You know, get out there and get out there to show support.
But I've asked you this before, Drew, and I think this is a very interesting parenting question. And I go, how much of that is her rallying against her father? And how much of that is she's a really smart, super liberal college girl?
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I know it's both. I get it. I get what it is. And I admire it too. I want to pay like credit to it. I want to what's the word I'm looking for? But honor it. And I couldn't. I was stuck where I called producers. And I called. Say, "How about if I go there?" Like, "No, you're not going."
No, that's all
right. I thought, well, it's not. She's not going to like this. And I've actually had to apologize to her a few times. And go, "Look, I will try to be more conscious in my choices," because she is so politically tuned in that if I do something that undermines her political position, I'm this public figure that's undermining what she values. It's very interesting.
I wonder, you know, thinking about how women get undermined for what their values are and what their value is as a person. And part of it's just it's just the nature of the beast, you know, the animal of male human. It just prioritizes female beauty so much higher than anything. It's unfortunate, but at the same time, that's just part of the deal. How do you guys – I mean, do you think that there's any chance that we as men and as fathers and as husbands understand the immense pressures that are put on women to either, A, have children if they don't want to? You know, like there's that always – a woman gets to be like 35 and it's like, never curious what it was like to have kids? You know, like a woman can't just be old and not have kids without people asking what's up. And then if she does, it's like, so you're just going to give up on your career? And if she does give up on her career, it's like, oh, so you give up on your dream.
No,
you know,
winning.
There's always,
you know,
like this pressure from – like it just doesn't apply to men. I certainly have pressure from being a dad and pressure to be successful in my industry, but nothing like Bianca faces, and I'm sure most women out there.
But you know what? I don't think it's a man-woman question at all. I think I wish women were kinder to each other and more understanding to each other about that than
about everything. Starting when they're 12. Wait until your daughter's turn 12.
No.
You'll be shocked.
I was
shocked.
12. No, I won't be shocked.
But you've seen how they become little animals and they just attack
Horrible.
Each other. And
it's
doesn't
like
let up.
That is a learned behavior, though. That's not.
No, there appears to be some.
You think it is?
Something of the. But when the hormones turn on and the.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
just because it's there, it doesn't mean it has to be tolerated.
Yeah.
I think that just like you say, that's not learned behavior. It's not learned behavior for 15-year-old boys to punch each other. It just happens.
Rough and tumble play in male mammals is universal.
Right.
We beat each other up.
Male monkeys will hump everything until they reach puberty. Hormones turn on, exclusively females. And it's just – that's just the nature of the biology.
But what is the purpose of women being that way towards each other? What does it
– Well, it's you can look at the anthropology of it, right?
Yeah,
It's shunning behavior ultimately. It's a way of controlling the social functions of the group.
Right.
It's if – you
Queen
know, if,
bee.
Does it have something about how they hope to make those women appear to other men? Is it like a maybe
there, there
like
is
controlling
some of it is some of it is mate selection. There, mm-hmm. It's what becomes mate selection later.
Yeah.
And some of it is, you know, what's going to happen, you know, allocation of resources during childbearing. I mean, if you look at in the bush, you know, how the anthropology of this. Now, and so here now it rains down on us in 2014-15. Doesn't have to be tolerated. We should be getting 12-year-old sure. girls outside and going, hey, this is not – this, I know you feel this way, but we got to – you got to right now.
Right.
This not,
it's a very good point because instinctively – I mean, this may sound crazy, but instinctively, rape's not all that far off from what male animals probably do. You know, like we see attractive women. We probably in, you know, a 1,000-plus years ago just took it. It doesn't mean it has to be tolerated as we've evolved.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that shaming behavior is probably
similar. I go to colleges and I say – and I point this out and I talk about – you know, why, for instance, there's a double standard for female sexuality and male sexuality. And the literature is extremely clear about that. The double standard is initiated by men but sustained by women. 100%. Men don't care.
Right.
Men don't care. But women are like, oh, she's a hoe. Stay away from her. Men, women will go around to the males and say, don't hang out with her because she has sex as a way of trying to control the sexual behavior of other women who might be a competitor to them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why do you do this? If you don't like the double standard, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it, women. Support each other. Love each other. It's so painful at whatever age to be any male or female. But why do you have to make it that much worse and then complain about it as though it's the men creating it or the man's creating it? No, it's the woman.
Yeah, well, and this is the point of really of our podcast, I think, is we just got tired of, you know, a motherhood should be this like all inclusive, like where you're joining the family here. And it's the worst place if you go on any forum of any of the types of parenting or birthing.
Why?
Maybe it's the hormones.
They're awful to each other. They're so judgmental and so opinionated and so horrible to each other.
So this is what's got to stop.
Yeah.
I mean, men at least, when we do it, like, violently and suddenly, and then we let it go.
Yeah. It's way more irrational, but it's
But it breaks my heart to think that we're still that way. It doesn't need to be. If you guys can solve that one.
We're working on it.
Number one podcast, I predict, on all of iTunes.
Everybody, Dr. Drew's, of course, referring to the podcast of these two lovely ladies who have been nice enough to share their podcast with us. They are Ellie Noss and Bianca Kylik. They are the Atomic Moms. Atomic Moms, at Atomic Moms on Twitter and Instagram and
Facebook.
There you go. And then, of course, just listen to you guys at Sideshow Network or anywhere podcasts
iTunes.
Can be found. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
And remember, assalamu alaikum, and we love you. Good night.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny and I love you.
A few days ago, Brooke Tudine posted an inspirational quote on her wall that got 17 likes and 3 comments. Thumbs up, Brooke. Geico also wants to make a comment. In just 15 minutes, you could save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance by switching to Geico. And nothing says inspiration better than saving money. Well, except for those posters that say things like teamwork, excellence, and make it happen. Hashtag keep climbing. Hashtag savings.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.